So the Dutch ate their prime minister?
I'm pretty sure the peasants rose up, killed their prime minister, and ate him.
Holy crap.
And they ate his brother, too. This was in 1672.
No, they ate his brother, too.
It was a full meal.
Oh, my God. Has that ever happened before?
It also happened in 1964 when John D. Rockefeller's grandson, Michael Rockefeller, was eaten by villagers in New Guinea.
Oh, my God. Wait, what happened?
He was on an expedition to seize indigenous artifacts, and his boat capsized, and he swam to shore and was never seen again.
Oh, my God. I love that. Like, indigenous revenge on the colonizers. You know, we need to collect these stories. We need to reinstill fear in the ruling class.
I agree. For far too long, the bourgeoisie have abused the world's poor with no fear of the guillotine.
And with no fear of cannibalism. I think it's time to make the rich scared again. It's time to give class wars some teeth.
Well, I mean, one, my dear brother, that you always have a calling to win. You want to bear witness at the highest level of quality, integrity, and honesty that you can. So, yes, I'm trying to push toward the finish line. Why? Because I want to reintroduce America to the best of itself. And it's fairly clear that Brother Trump, neo-fascist gangster, not the best. Brother Biden, neoliberal hypocrite, not the best. I want the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., Dorothy Day, Abraham Joshua Heschel, and Edward Said, and Chief Joseph, and Grace Lee Boggs, and Louise Marino. These are those fighting for poor and working people. Both parties stand in the way of the empowerment of poor and working people. Both parties tied Wall Street, militarism, Pentagon, tied to Silicon Valley. What about the 60% of precious Americans of all colors who are struggling every day and month to put food on the table and are hardly doing it, while the 1% is simply tied to their quests for the luxurious life? American democracy not just is at stake, the whole planet, Brother Jake. You know that, man, with fossil fuels. And look at the debt ceiling agreement. We can make a deal with Brother Manchin in terms of his pipeline that will do in not just working class people's spaces, but ecological collapse, given what's going on the East Coast. But we can't make a deal with him in terms of voting rights in regard to the filibuster. That's Brother Biden. We need something better.
That was Dr. Cornel West, professor, philosopher, activist, and leading U.S. public intellectual, as well as the premier standard bearer of the Black prophetic tradition in the United States. Here he's talking to CNN's Jake Tapper about why he's running for president. We thought his voice was extremely relevant today as we talk about the debt ceiling deal and the latest attack on the working class people of this country. A deal that slashes social spending for poor and working people, increases funding for militarism, and fast-tracks fossil fuel projects that are already destroying our futures. We will get into all of these issues.
But first, we want to thank our patrons. This podcast is brought to you by our non-corporate VIP donors, such as Ben Andrews, Danielle Boley, Liz Font, and our recognized rebels, Kenny Jones, Todd Munson, Janae Saliba, Greta Hunneke, and Old Left.
Yes, thank you to our VIP, our recognized rebels, and all of our financial contributors, as well as those of you who simply share this podcast and talk about it with your friends. We need all the support we can get, and all of your help makes this podcast possible.
All right, thank you. So we want to talk a little bit about the debt ceiling crisis and the resulting congressional negotiations that have taken place in the last few weeks. We usually start our shows with two separate sections, an anti-fascist and anti-Brunchen section, to report on the far right wing and its neoliberal allies.
But in the case of the debt ceiling crisis, the neoliberals and neoconservatives have been working so well together that we decided to comment on how much they've been cooperating. And that discussion turned into an entire episode. So let's start out with geopolitical economist Ben Norton and his take on this so-called crisis.
The U.S. government has reached its debt limit of $31 trillion. There's nonstop discussion of this in the media and certainly all over YouTube. There are a lot of hyperbolic videos claiming that this is the end of the world, the US government is going to default. I have found most of this coverage pretty annoying and misleading. So today I want to make two brief points that I want to hit home that you're probably not going to see mentioned in the mainstream corporate media. Point one, pretty much no one in Washington actually cares about the debt ceiling. This is a political football that is used every few years to justify cutting government funding for the very few social programs that do exist. And the reality is that this debt is denominated in dollars. It is money that the US government could print and just pay off. I mean, it would lead to inflation, but the US Federal Reserve, the central bank, printed $8 trillion from 2008 until 2022, over 14 years of quantitative easing, to support a big asset bubble to help rich people get even richer. So the US government has a precedent for printing this money. However, countries in the global south cannot do that. You see many foreign countries, especially in the global south, when they have debt, their government debt is often denominated in other currencies, specifically the US dollar, and they can't print US dollars, so that traps them in unpayable debt. And I recently did a video and a podcast about Argentina's odious debt that it's trapped in, denominated largely in US dollars. I will link to that in the description below. But the other point that I want to stress here is that it's very clear from the deal that US President Joe Biden, a Democrat, made with the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy. They agreed in their deal to make it more difficult for people in the US to get access to food stamps and welfare. And at the same time, they increased the military budget to $885 billion. So it's very clear. That decision alone makes it clear that no one in Washington actually believes that the debt ceiling is important, because they're willing every single year to keep increasing the military budget, which very well could reach $1 trillion by 2030. They keep increasing the military budget to wage war on Russia, on China, on Iran, on countries all around the world. Syria is still militarily occupied. So while we hear this constant chatter in the media, this debate, this false debate about the debt ceiling, both Republicans and Democrats are totally on board with continuing to expand the war budget.
Yep, this is a totally manufactured crisis. If the United States were actually concerned about the budget, they would cut the extremely bloated military budget, by far the largest military budget in the world, bigger than the military budgets of the next 10 countries combined. But instead, the Uniparty is actually expanding the military budget while waging economic war on the working class, as always.
Yeah, let's talk about what was in this Biden-McCarthy deal, as the mainstream media has called it. President Biden and Congress have agreed on a bipartisan deal suspending the debt ceiling until January 1st, 2025. The entire deal that was made with Republicans caps domestic spending below the current rate of inflation. Given that we're in a period of record inflation, to cap social spending below the rate of inflation is something we can interpret as a direct attack on the working class.
Yeah. So the entire debt ceiling negotiation started with slashing social spending. Among other concessions to Republicans, Ben Norton mentioned making it harder for people to get food stamps. And that's right. As part of the deal that Biden signed with Republicans, the deal implements work reporting requirements for food stamps and other social programs. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, nearly 750,000 low-income adults ages 50 to 54 are likely to lose their federal food assistance because of this deal. This will be low-income people, largely women of color, under our patriarchal system of racial capitalism. And just so you know, the federal budget of 2023 allocated $119 billion for food stamps. That's a whopping 1.9% of the total federal budget, folks. And this is the part of the budget that they chose to cut for the debt ceiling deal.
The debt ceiling deal also ends President Biden's moratorium on student debt repayments. The first moratorium was enacted by President Trump in March 2020, and it was extended 8 times. The policy has suspended the accrual of interest on federal student loan debt and allowed borrowers to forego making their payments without facing any penalties. More than 43 million people have federal student loan debt in the U.S., and the average borrower has about $37,000, according to data compiled by the Education Data Initiative. The outstanding federal loan balance is about $1.6 trillion.
So millions of working class citizens will have to start repaying their loans on top of paying for more gas, food, housing, and other essentials that have drastically increased under record inflation. For example, rents have risen 16.3% since April 2021, an annual rate of 8.17% that equates to more than $276 a month. Consumer food prices rose 7.7% for the year ending in April 2023. It's not easy to afford to live right now, and resuming the student loan repayments is going to make it much more difficult.
And of course, Biden campaigned hard on student loan debt forgiveness. It was a huge part of his platform. But after the campaign dust settled, he spelled it out. And debt forgiveness wasn't for all students. Biden explains it here in August of 2022.
My campaign for president, I made a commitment. I made a commitment that would provide student debt relief. And I'm honoring that commitment today. Using the authority Congress granted the Department of Education, we will forgive $10,000 in outstanding federal student loans. In addition, students who come from low-income families, which allowed them to qualify to receive a Pell Grant, will have their debt reduced $20,000. Both of these targeted actions are for families who need it the most. Working and middle-class people hit especially hard during the pandemic, making under $125,000 a year. All this means people can start finally crawl out from under that mountain of debt, to get on top of their rent and their utilities, to finally think about buying a home or starting a family or starting a business. In the coming weeks, the Department of Education will lay out in detail a short and simple form to apply for this relief, along with information when this application process opens.
Okay, so Biden did implement this low-income federal debt forgiveness plan for Pell Grant recipients who went to public universities. But there was no debt forgiveness for private student loans, right? Sallie Mae, Freddie Mac, just federal student loans for a certain section of low-income students. And then when COVID started in 2020, the Trump administration paused all federal student loan repayments under the CARES Act, correct?
That's right. And now, after about 8 pauses on debt repayments, the debt ceiling deal forces all federal student loan debt payments to resume this August. In this clip, Braxton Brewington of the Debt Collective explains on Democracy Now!
For more, we're joined by Braxton Brewington, press secretary at the Debt Collective, a group working to end the student loan crisis. Braxton, welcome back to Democracy Now! We only have a few minutes. Can you respond to the passage of the debt ceiling legislation and how it impacts student loan?
This is President Biden turning his back on student debtors. What this provision in the debt ceiling does is essentially codify an end to the student loan pause. It says not only should student debtors have to resume payments on September 1st, but that the pause can never be extended again. And so what that risks is that should June this month, the Supreme Court rule against student debt relief, student loan borrowers are going to be in what could be the worst financial position they've ever been in, which is going through COVID, having a student debt crisis, but not having their student debt relief and having to resume costly payments.
And Braxton, if you could give us a sense, I mean, what is the scale of the student debt crisis and what impact is this likely to have on literally tens of millions of student debtors in the U.S.?
Student debt is the second largest household debt type in the entire country. In 2019, people defaulted on their student debt every 26 seconds. A million people a year defaulted on their student debt. Senior citizens had their Social Security checks garnished. Veterans had their wages garnished. People aren't able to purchase a home. They're not able to have children or start a small business or start a family. And so the crisis of student debt is a large one before COVID, now exacerbated by COVID, where people have lost their health insurance, their wages have been stagnated, or some have even declined. We're looking at a situation now where people after the pandemic don't actually have any relief because of student debt possibly not going through because of the Supreme Court. And that's why the backstop of the pause is so important, because it's really the only thing keeping student debtors afloat from not falling into financial decline.
Wow. That's really debilitating.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. What we're looking at here is a real war on the students.
Yeah. So student debt is the second largest type of debt in this country, right after medical debt, of course. And he's right that Biden is turning his back on students. I mean, Biden ran his presidential campaign on forgiving large amounts of student debt. He made it seem like he was serious. So of course these students feel abandoned.
Yeah, that's right. Biden's loan forgiveness plan was always means tested, but what he promised did not match up with what he delivered. The student debt relief that he did pass only included, as he said, $10,000 in student debt relief for borrowers who fall under an income cap of $125,000 and $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. There was no work program to cancel all student loan debt, and no mention of canceling all student loan debt for students making less than $125,000 or attending HBCUs, which is what he originally promised. Instead of having all their student loan debt forgiven, borrowers only got $10,000, which really isn't much.
Yeah, I mean, what even happened to the HBCU promise? Was there any relief given to HBCUs?
Not that I know of, no.
Wow. Yeah, and even $10,000 or $20,000 in debt relief is nothing when you look at the kinds of crippling amounts of student debt that millions and millions of graduates have. I mean, even among my own friends, anecdotally, it's very common for them to have $70,000, $80,000, or even $90,000 or more than $100,000 of student debt. I mean, really, how is anyone going to make any headway in this economy on repaying their student debt when they're just getting a tiny little amount of it forgiven, and we're under record inflation, and now that tiny little amount has been canceled?
Like Braxton was saying, it should be noted, Biden's poorly worded bill was challenged in court and may very well be overturned by the Supreme Court, meaning there will never be any more student debt relief at all. There were so many other mechanisms Biden could have used to forgive student loan debt, but he chose the one that was most likely to face legal challenges.
Brilliant, Biden. Way to set things up for failure. So he could have done an executive order, but because of this poorly worded bill, it's now going to be challenged in court all the way up to the Supreme Court, and students may never see debt relief again. Why does this feel like another neoliberal capitulation to the far right? I mean, we've already had a near fascist takeover of the Supreme Court, and this debt relief plan was already subpar to begin with. And now, because of these legal challenges, it's likely to just disappear completely and forever.
Yeah, it's another broken promise by Biden, another shift to the right by the Democrats.
Yeah. And so much for those HBCUs.
Yeah, just so many broken promises. It's hard to keep track of them all.
Yeah.
On a side note, another thing that was lost in the debt ceiling negotiations was $30 billion in leftover COVID benefits. That money will simply not be spent. That's another $30 billion in relief taken directly from the working class. And Biden was happy to negotiate that away.
Why couldn't they have just given that $30 billion back to the food stamp recipients or the student debtors, the student debt relief program?
What, and to help the working class and the poor?
Right. The Biden administration wouldn't do that because Republicans might not like it. So we've talked about the cuts in funding to student loans and food stamp recipients. Now let's talk about where the debt ceiling puts even more money.
Yeah, common sense would say, you know, if we have to cut spending to reduce the federal debt, which, you know, as Ben told us, we don't actually have to do, but if we did, then we should have to cut spending across the board, right?
Right. But ironically, we're not cutting spending across the board because the debt ceiling actually increases military spending and it fast tracks the approval and construction of the highly protested 300 plus mile long fracked gas Mountain Valley pipeline. That's the one being built through West Virginia and Virginia, Joe Manchin's pipeline.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge giveaway to Colbert and Joe Manchin, oil and gas interests, and a major blow to the climate.
Yeah, environmental activists are livid because this 300 mile fracked gas pipeline will endanger hundreds of waterways, threaten all kinds of biological diversity, and of course, worsen the climate crisis. This debt deal greenlights all federal approvals for the Mountain Valley Pipeline and blocks most judicial review of those approvals. Can you believe that?
Yeah, it's just awful.
Yeah. So this pipeline would lead to annual emissions equivalent to more than 89 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, according to analysis by Oil Change International. This carbon dioxide is equal to the emissions from 26 coal plants or 19 million passenger vehicles per year. Here's a statement from Jean Hsu, Energy Justice Program Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. Quote, President Biden made a colossal error in negotiating a deal that sacrifices the climate and working families. Biden has allowed Senator Manchin and Republicans to hold the government hostage and ram through the climate-killing Mountain Valley Pipeline, dramatically roll back bedrock environmental laws that give voice to frontline communities, and sabotage agencies whose job it is to protect the environment and working families. Congress should reject these poison pills and pass a clean debt ceiling bill, end quote.
Right. Congress didn't do that. They passed the bill with those poison pills. Here's another quote from Peter Anderson, Virginia Policy Director at Appalachian Voices, a campaign group that has charted hundreds of environmental violations by the Mountain Valley Pipeline project across the two states. Quote, singling out the Mountain Valley Pipeline for approval in a vote about our nation's credit limit is an egregious act. By attempting to suspend the rules for a pipeline company that has repeatedly polluted communities' water and flouted the conditions in its permits, the President and Congress would deny basic legal protections, procedural fairness, and environmental justice to communities along the pipeline's path.
And the Mountain Valley Pipeline isn't the only thing this debt ceiling fast-tracks. This deal made it easier to fast-track any energy infrastructure project, which of course, for this government, means any fossil fuel project. So we should expect to see more climate-destructive projects coming down the pipeline, no pun intended.
Like the Willow Project, which Biden already approved, but I'm sure there's more things just like that.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the debt ceiling deal keeps non-defense spending flat next year, while defense spending would increase from roughly $800 billion to $886 billion, which amounts to a 3% rise just in the next year.
So that's the corporate Democratic Party for you today, folks. Giant cuts to social spending, giant cuts to food stamps, and increases in the military budget and climate destruction. Awesome. But this should really come as no surprise to anyone who's familiar with Joe Biden's record. For decades, he has bragged about his willingness and ability to reach across the aisle to give Republicans what they want at the expense of working families. And of course, as the Overton window and the government itself just keeps shifting further and further to the right, Joe Biden's willingness to negotiate at this point in history does not actually make him a good diplomat, but an enabler of fascism, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, this is really a good example of how the government functions under capitalism, and specifically under monopoly capitalism. Paul Sweezy, the founder of Monthly Review, among other things, a Harvard economist, wrote about this in the 1960s. The big corporations have the money to spend on lobbying, and therefore everything that gets passed is generally to their benefit. Meanwhile, the working class are barely getting by and can't afford to give millions to lobbyists to influence legislation. The result is that only pro-corporate legislation is successful in Washington. And it's only gotten worse as big capital has concentrated more and more, and the floodgates to corporate spending were opened up with Citizens United.
And of course, even before Citizens United, we had this massive political problem of dark money, millions and billions of dollars every year being funneled to the fossil fuel industry, the military-industrial complex, and weapons manufacturers. The corruption is rampant, and that kind of dark money only continues. And this debt ceiling deal brings this government's priorities right out into the open. It expands war, the war budget, massive fracking programs, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, and let's not forget about the Willow Project that Biden had already greenlighted, a fossil fuel project expected to add some 240 million metric tons of greenhouse gas pollution to the atmosphere over the next 30 years.
Wow. Yeah, so Biden's gonna, slash debt relief to students, slash environmental protections, and destroy what's left of the tiny welfare programs we had for the working class and the poor. And the Biden administration is celebrating this compromise that they made with Republicans.
Yep.
They're not even saying, sorry, folks, we didn't want to do it, but we had to do it. They're heralding this debt ceiling deal as a huge accomplishment for the Biden administration. Here's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Democrats are feeling very good tonight. We've saved the country from the scourge of default, even though there were some on the other side who wanted default, wanted to lead us to default. We may be a little tired, but we did it. So we're very, very happy. Default was the giant sword hanging over America's head. But because of the good work of President Biden, as well as Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate, we are not defaulting. Tonight's vote is a good outcome because Democrats did a very good job taking the worst parts of the Republican plan off the table. And that's why Dems voted overwhelmingly for this bill, while Republicans, certainly in the Senate, did not.
God, that just makes me want to puke. The scourge of default. As if anyone in the United States cares about this quote, scourge, when two-thirds of the country's people are living paycheck to paycheck and can barely afford to put food on the table. Here's Chuck Schumer congratulating himself for funneling even more money to the most bloated military budget in the world, further destroying the climate and literally robbing the poor of food on their tables. This is the Uniparty at its finest.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer is one of the top fascist enablers, along with Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, and really at this point, most of the Democratic Party. And Biden didn't have to negotiate the debt ceiling with fascist Republicans who just want to cut the tiny budget for social programs that the US has. But he is the compromise king, always bragging on the Senate floor about his willingness to reach across the aisle and negotiate with fascists.
Yeah. This is a guy who spent most of his political career promising to privatize Medicare and Medicaid. A guy who worked with Strom Thurmond to try to block racial integration of public schools. Biden has a stellar record of working with the far right and Republicans. So it's really no surprise to see him bragging about gutting environmental regulations, fast-tracking climate-killing fossil fuel projects, and condemning students to a lifetime of debt and misery, kicking poor people off of food stamps, and giving all of that money to the war machine.
Yeah, and like we said before, none of this even had to happen. For a little global context, the United States and Denmark are the only two countries that even have a debt ceiling. And Denmark's debt ceiling is set so high that it is never really an issue. Well, as the United States, on the other hand, keeps on running into it and having to increase it.
Yeah. So let's just call a spade a spade. The debt ceiling exists for one reason, to give both corporate parties an excuse to continually cut social spending whenever they run into that ceiling, which is basically all the time now. When was the last time the government had to cut social programs because of the debt ceiling?
I don't know. They keep on doing it. Our government is constantly raising the debt ceiling, which just goes to show that it's a bunch of malarkey, to borrow a Joe Biden term. His promises to students, his promises about being the environmental president, they're all malarkey.
Yeah, I mean, he's breaking promises all the time. He actually even promised not to negotiate on the debt ceiling. Talk about the most ironic of broken promises. Here is White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre on January 13th, 2023.
We will not be doing any negotiation over the debt ceiling.
You say that there'll be no negotiating. You will not negotiate anything involving spending?
In the past, we have seen this. We have seen both Republicans and Democrats come together to deal with this issue. It is one of the basic items that Congress has to deal with, and it should be done without conditions. So there's going to be no negotiation over it. This is something that must get done.
So what the press secretary is saying here, but not very clearly, is that the debt ceiling can just be raised. Now that's what happens. That's what should happen. But there won't be any conditions placed on raising it or messy negotiations involved. Of course, that was in January.
Yeah, and that's what some progressive Democrats who voted against the debt ceiling have pointed out. There was no need to negotiate on this debt ceiling because the Democrats could have simply raised the ceiling during the lame duck session when they had a majority in the House and the Senate. That's what Biden promised to do. He promised not to negotiate.
Yes, and as Ben Norton points out in the episode he referenced at the beginning, which we highly recommend listening to in full and we'll link to in the show notes, this U.S. debt is enumerated in dollars, which means the U.S. could have easily avoided this debt crisis by simply creating more dollars, you know, as they say, printing more money, something the U.S. government has done freely in the past and will continue to do in the future.
Right. According to Ben Norton, the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, effectively printed $8 trillion from 2008 until 2022, over 14 years of quantitative easing. And printing more money would have been another way to avoid this debt crisis.
Yep, there was no reason this had to become a huge crisis or public spectacle. Remember, the Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. They could have done any number of things in the lame duck session to avoid this crisis and having to negotiate with Republicans.
Yep, I remember when certain economists were suggesting doing just that. When the Democrats had the House and the Senate, it was being publicly discussed. It just goes to show again that this was a totally manufactured crisis. They wanted to create this false sense of urgency and impending doom just so they could justify slashing social spending and funneling more money to the military and fossil fuels. And look at the underlying rationale. All of these austerity measures are inflicted on the public in the name of scarcity. They want us to think that there's just not enough money to go around. Not enough money for food stamps. That whole 1.9% of the federal budget has to be cut. Yeah, let's just cut food stamps to the poor. What kind of government does that? It's barbaric.
Yeah, just totally awful. Just class war on the poor. When actually the Unit Party just need an excuse to funnel more money to fossil fuel companies and weapons manufacturers. And the debt ceiling gave them the perfect excuse. They've got plenty of money when it comes to the military, increasing police budgets, or expanding fossil fuels. There's no scarcity for that.
So we'll just end with this song from Tupac. He said it best. They've got money for war, but they can't feed the poor.
It seems the rain will never let up. I try to keep my head up and still keep from getting wetter. You know, it's funny when it rains, it pours. They got money for wars, but can't feed the poor.
Thanks so much for listening to Crawdads and Taters. If you like this kind of non-corporate, independent analysis, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends.
And please consider becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/crawdadsandtaters.